When John Henry was a little bitty boy, you could set him on the palm of your hand. John Henry's mammy looked down at him and said, my Johnny gonna be a steel-driving man, Papa. Johnny gonna be a steel-driving man.
John Henry, some said he was a black man, and then others teached he was a white man. And so I don't know now. Probably he was a black man, John Henry, of a steel-driving man.
John Henry, as far as I can find out, actually existed, and he must have been a pretty good fellow. He was a mighty man, and the truth of it.
He was a little over 6 feet tall, weighed about 200 pounds. He wasn't a rough house man. He was well-liked by those who worked with him.
Nobody knows actually what size man he was, but he was just an ordinary citizen and an ex-slave. A lot of people think it's a myth. We don't know.
All right, boys and girls, you know we have been talking about stories. Well, today we have a story about a person that we're not sure is a real person, or it could be a make-believe person. And this person comes from around here. It's a big person.
A giant.
No, not a giant.
John Henry.
Okay, we passed that statue. Today's story is about John Henry.
Now John Henry was a little boy, sitting on his mammy's knee. He picked up a hammer and a little bit of steel. The hammer gonna be the death of me. Hammer gonna be the death of me.
One day, John Henry and Polly Ann were walking through the hills of West Virginia. There were hammers ringing. Men were hammering and singing. They were building the Big Bend Tunnel on the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad, going right through the mountain, right where we live today. You can look over there on that railroad track below the tunnel, and you can see that. Okay, come on back. The trees are hiding it right now, okay? Come on back.
The tunnel started in 1870. Labor was done mostly by the Irish and blacks.
There were a lot of freed slaves that were looking for jobs, so they drifted towards this area. So my ancestors and my husband's drifted in here.
At that time, there was no modern machinery, but they did have people who were good at driving an iron bar.
It's like a huge crowbar, you know, with a star-shaped point on it, and the shaker boy turned it back and forth every time he'd hit it, and it made it cut into the stone.
And it took two men to work with this. One of them was called a shaker, and his job was to lift the bar up and twist it. And the other was to hit the bar and drill through.
It was, at best, back-breaking work, long hours, low pay, and at worst, incredibly dangerous because there really were no very good safeguards against accidents. There were many deaths building the Big Bend Tunnel.
Now John Henry said to the captain, man, you ought to see me swing. I weigh 49 pounds from my hips on down. I love to hear that cold steel ring. I love to hear that cold steel ring.
The coming of the railroad meant enormous changes. It had been a largely white area, and it was really very isolated. And I've thought about this a lot, and I can't even imagine what it must have been like suddenly to have all this equipment and all these new people and this tunnel going through this mountain. It must just have been astonishing.
They invented a little old steam drill years ago, you know. And John Henry didn't want to be drove down. We said before he'd see the steam drill drive him down, he'd die with the hammers in his hand. And that's true. That's true, yeah. That's a true song.
My grandparents moved here when they were building the tunnel. I've heard them talk about John Henry we just grew up listening to all of them, you know, just talking about that.
When I worked at the Big Bend Tunnel, I heard stories about the legend about John Henry and all with the men that I worked with.
Uncle Banks, Terry, who lived to be, say, 113 when he died, he didn't see John Henry, but he heard everybody talking about the machine and the man that tried to beat the machine.
Said, before I see this steam reel dry me down, I'll die with these hammers in my hand, Lord, Lord, I'll die with these hammers in my hand.
John Henry knew that there were several workers wanting a job. And this machine, if it could do the work, it was going to cut a whole lot of people out of jobs. So he said, no machine can do what a human can do.
I can imagine John Henry looking at that machine and say, shucks, I don't think that machine can beat me. And then the captain, I can imagine they was all betting, hey, look, man, captain going to put John Henry against that machine out there. And some of them taking, no, John Henry, see, he ain't going to never get nowhere with that. And, you know, some talking about, yeah, I believe he will, too. I bet John Henry can beat that machine. And next thing, they might be betting money on that, stuff like that. And then at the day of that contest when John Henry got up in that Big Bend Tunnel and started driving them spikes, boy, I tell you, and that machine by his side, boy.
John Henry hammered in the mountainside till his hammer was striking fire. And the last words I heard the poor boy say, cool drink of water for a dime. Give me a cool drink of water for a dime.
The whistle blew. The race was over. John Henry has beaten the machine. Everyone clapped their hands and stomped around and laughed and carried on. Polly Ann came running over with the baby. When he got there, John Henry was laying on the ground. I feel a little tuckered out, he said, but I beat that machine, didn't I? Just like I said I would. John Henry reached for the baby with one hand and for his hammer with the other, and then he smiled and closed his eyes. I think he's gone, little Will said. He's gone, said Polly Ann. Polly Ann nodded. He was the best, the very best.
Aww.
Aww.
You can't convince many people here but what John Henry actually lived. Too many local people have passed down from generation to generation enough history of John Henry. We have no doubt of what he lived.
I'm so much convinced that John Henry was such a real person that I would gamble my life on it.
There's, I guess, about as much chance as tracing the historical John Henry as there is the historical Jesus.
That's the trouble with what's happened. If we had all the history written down that could have been passed down from generation to generation, we would have a solid core to stand on.
You can't find a birth date and a death date for him like you can George Washington, Carver, Booker T. Washington. They're the ones that we sort of trot out in our elementary school textbooks. John Henry has never needed that kind of artificial insemination or whatever you'd care to call it. John Henry's sort of been in our collective face all of this time.
A lot of people use John Henry as a kind of role model, you know. Almost anywhere you would go in the black community where people were playing blues and playing folk music, like, there would always be somebody come up and say, hey, do you know John Henry?
He lived almost entirely in oral tradition, and so lots of different people made of John Henry many different kinds of men, and it contributes to the way in which he's a universal kind of hero, and lots of different people can claim him and make him their own.
As you enter Talkit from the west or the east, you'll see a sign that says Talkit, home of John Henry legend, and welcome.
When you come in Talkit, it looks like a little valley between the mountains of the hills. And in the center of this valley, you will find the river. Beside of it's a track, and beside of the track, the state highway.
We're crossing the main line, which is the line's being used today. We're entering the area where the old track used to be in the Big Bend Tunnel. It's now closed and growed up. You can't hardly get there. The hole is still, right now we can see the hole in the mountain. We're walking through a maze of cross ties and snake infested areas.
I graduated in 1930. Back then, this was a big freight station, and the railroad had a booming business here. I can remember the depot over here. My dad would pick up wire and fencing and fertilize and seed to haul it back to the farm. And I still live on the same farm, still farming.
Talkett was a big place. They had a station down there. And we'd go down to the station and watch the people get on and ones get off for every train in the evening.
Oh, there was a gang of trains running years ago here, and they all stopped. The number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6, and 13, 14.
13, 14. There was quite a few trains that stopped here. All of that was years ago.
About the end of the 40s, they tore the depot down. No trains stop here now.
The coal industry in West Virginia has gone down. There used to be a big yard office, a switching yard in Hinton, and that's completely gone. And that's what's called the depression in this area. This depletion of the railroad industry is just about gone anymore.
And so we're down until very few people are employed. It just drained the population.
We have quite a few retired people, and quite a few people in our area are on welfare because they can't find work and they can't afford to pick up what they have here and move away between a rock and a hard place. John Henry supposedly was the fastest spike driver on the railroad. He ever worked for the railroad. He could drive a spike in so many licks, hit it so many times, and the spike would be in. Manual labor done all the railroad work. They drove every spike, set every tie by hand. The steam drill came along and it hit it one time and knocked it plumb through the cross tie. So now you have a whole bunch of machines and 4 or 5 men go down the railroad track putting in ties and rail and spikes, and they do the whole thing. So automation has taken its toll.
This always happens every time there's a technological advance. What happens to the people who are displaced? Manual labor suddenly becomes obsolete because of the technological takeover. It's something we're still encountering in the 20th century. We've played versions of the John Henry drama throughout our entire history as a people, I think.
When they got ready to put the tunnel, they bought all the property down through there. And some people didn't want to sell to the river. They just condemned it and took it. And when the first state road came through here, Miss Crockett, her grandfather owned a house on the river, and they wanted to buy her grandfather's home, and he didn't want to sell. His children had been raised there and everything. They just condemned it and took it.
When I was a child, I used to stay with my grandparents a lot down on the river. Then when they put the highway through, they blasted that place up, and they had to move. I wrote a poem about that.
Get it here somewhere.
Can I read it to you? This place was a heaven to me. On the banks of the Greenbrier River, where the sun shines bright each day, I spent a happy childhood with my grandparents old and gray. Where the whippoorwill sang me to sleep each night, and the crickets chirped with glee. The frogs, the owls, and katydids, that place was a heaven to me. My grandparents were the Evans, who I'm sure everyone knows, Uncle Cal and Aunt Ada, as the saying goes. They lived by the Greenbrier River for more than 30 years, down close to the Big Bend Tunnel. The old place still seems so dear. We all lived there so happy until that awful day. The state decided to build a road, then they had to move away. It broke our hearts to leave there. But the state had other plans. They were building a state highway, and they had to take their land. My grandparents both are dead now. They died with a broken heart. The old home place they loved so well, I'm sure they never forgot. I go there every summer, just to fish and swim. There's no one there to greet me and no home to enter in. I often sit and wonder just why it had to be. The old home place we loved so well was more than a heaven to me.
People say that talking doesn't change is the same, but if you go away, you'll see there's a lot of changes. I notice the change is their names. So many, everybody mostly, had to leave Talker to get jobs. And there's not always near as many people.
You look out here now, and you see a couple kids playing together. Back when I was a kid, they'd be 15 or 20 gathered up in some fields and we're kicking an old ball around.
I don't really see myself coming back after I graduate because there's really no industry around in Summers County, no major businesses, just... I've always had a part of me wanted to live in a city.
We have one daughter that she's in Pennsylvania because there was no work here. She hates to be away from home, but she's in a small area and she enjoys it. And I don't think she'll ever come back. But there's nothing to bring her back here.
It's a shame that when young people finish their education, that they can't find some employment. And the young people don't like to go back to the farms. You don't get rich on a farm. You can exist.
I've always liked living here. The ones I graduated with, a lot of them have moved away to college and married and stuff. But I still see them every now and then. And I don't like the city. I like the country. I like the quiet. I really don't want to move away.
If you see anybody from here that were maybe 50 years ago, they used to live here, they want to come back to Talkit. And they are buried, a lot of them, in the cemetery now. They always come back to Talkit.
If you were to drive through the Talkit area from east to west, all the way through Talkit, you would see the CNO Railroad, which was the CNO Railway, which is CSX now.
Let's see, going west, there's the old swimming hole. The first thing that you would notice on the river.
The swimming hole was a place that even in back in the day, like in the 40s and 50s, was not segregated. Other places in Talkit were, the black people had their place of living, white people had their place of living, but the swimming hole was like a meeting place. Everybody went there. Okay, I'm taking you to the old swimming hole at Talkit. It's like trees that are very old, and some are leaning over towards the river. Lush undergrowth. And like a camper there, and it's like a little island, we call it. And it's just a beautiful, peaceful place. Other places on down lower was the baptismal place for the church. And the older people who can't come down because of the rock cliff, they will stand up there and sing or pray. Baptized my son a year ago here.
Our Baptist church is called the Second Baptist Church of Talkit. But it's across the highway and the railroad track from the Rollinsburg Church. It's all white. At times we have joined our congregations. There's no malice, as I have seen, but we have two separate churches.
There's been, a general decline in church attendance, really. Of course, the church is like anything else. It goes up and down. Sometimes you have good prosperity, and then sometimes you kind of level off and maybe take a dip or two before you come back up again.
In times like these, you need a Savior. In times like these, you need an anchor. Be very sure. Be very sure your anchor holds and grips the solid rock.
The next thing you would see would probably be a railroad crossing. Just before you would cross this crossing, there's a post office. We do have a post office here.
My name is Mr. Dillon. I'm postmaster here at Talkett, West Virginia. It's a small community, but it's a very tight-knit community, and most everybody knows everybody. Afternoon. How you doing today?
As you cross this railroad crossing, you would find the only grocery store in our community, and run by a very nice family.
Running a small little country grocery store, Dillon Superette. I'm pretty well familiar with everybody. I've lived here all my life, and you know, if anybody wants to know anything, fire trucks goes out, our phone starts ringing. Where's the fire truck going? If anybody has a wreck, or if anybody is sick, or anybody in the hospital, you know, they'll call here. Well, they think we know everything, but we don't.
Same thing.
$5.50.
You know, you keep coming back. This is still home.
Oh yeah, a place like home.
As you continued past the post office, there's a road on the right hand side. It turns into a place called Pie Holler, and this is a black community, basically black community. Most of them live in this area and have lived there for years and years.
In the days when John Henry was building the tunnel, it was sort of segregated, and the holler was the place where all the black people lived. And to this day, it's still that way.
They're colored up there, but I go up there every once in a while to visit them, and a lot of our friends are up there.
When I was a kid, I went into their homes and sat down at the table and ate with them and played with them, and there's some fine people.
Talkett has always... We had no trouble. We knew that some certain things that we were not supposed to do, like going in front, we were supposed to go around to the side and all that. It was just accepted. But I can't say that there was ever any real trouble.
It's quiet and there's good people here. There's a lot of colored, but they're good people. They come in here when these works was going on years ago. And of course, another generation grew up, but the old generation was fine people. And they all got along, worked together and everything. We had good times. A lot of them now is my friends. They stopped by and see me. And I worked with them on CNO. A lot of the porters rode the train.
I'll tell you how it is. There's four sons that I have, and they had married four white girls. My grandmother was half white and half Indian. So I couldn't bring up a child to hate anybody, either side. And I tried not to. People to people.
And if you continue on down the road, we have a what I call a beer joint, and our school road is right beside of this, goes up onto up to a hill to where our local school is at. Okay, if you continue past the schoolhouse road, on the left-hand side of the road, almost to the top of the mountain, you'd be directly over the tunnels that John Henry supposedly built.
The old tunnel still stands with the brick arch. The water drips through the brick. You can go there and see the water dripping and hear it dripping in the tunnel even yet today.
This tunnel is the Great Bend Tunnel, which is the tunnel that John Henry supposedly drove a spike in, had a heart attack, and died racing with a steam drill. Would have happened right here where we're standing in this general area. Looking in the tunnel, the track is gone and the water is dripping through the tunnel. As we stand here and look, we can see a small light, which is the other end of the tunnel, which is some 9/10 of a mile away. And we can only barely see a small light because of the debris that has fallen somewhere in the middle of the tunnel.
When it rains like it is today, that water dropping down in there, and you can hear ping, ping, just like a hammer. And they said, it's John Henry's. You can hear it. You get a feeling of other people.
You look into it, and it's foggy and misty, and it looks like the waters. I mean, it just looks like a river inside of it. And see a few pop cans, cross ties laying in front of the tunnel. It's just total blackness, and you can feel the wetness in the air.
It's really dangerous for us to be here. I'm ready to get out of here.
In 73, the statue of John Henry was erected up there, right on top of Big Bend Tunnel.
the statue has been rocked and bombed and drug down and tore down by children. But he's there, and I guess in the hearts of the people of this community, it's something, I guess, that we cling to.
People do stop at the statue. I believe that it could be a profitable thing if Talkit would talk it up more, or like if we'd had a ball team named the Steel Drivers or something like that.
There's a lot of community spirit here. If we can get the ball field fenced, we can give the go-ahead and get some Little League goes up there, and that'll be another addition and attraction to add with John Henry.
Early Monday morning on the eastbound train, couldn't hardly stay in bed. Early Monday morning on the eastbound train, going where John Henry was dead. Going where John Henry was dead.
What makes me love that song is a feeling in it, a feeling in John Henry. That's what makes it so holding on. It goes to you what makes it hold on, and going through the people to remember it and singing it yet with their music.
The story still stands. Even today, they probably got machines out there that can drive 10 times as fast as John Henry drove them spikes. But he had made a mark that people will forever look up to him.
John Henry was helped along by the folk song process, which is that the song stayed important because it was important. It's a little microcosm of an ongoing American conflict that we all understand.
It's nice that you live in a community where you know everybody, but you have some history that you can always identify with no matter where you go. Somebody has heard that legend. And nice being able to say, well, I'm postmaster where John Henry beat the steam drill.
You can't keep nothing looking like nothing around here on this river, but I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world. I love the river.
I've been to most of the large cities, and after I see everybody, I begin to think about coming home. These mountains, you know, there's mountains all the way around, and you feel protected. The song says, from Allegheny's lofty peaks to mountains towards the west, there lies a state whose mooring speaks of beauty and the best. And West Virginia's scenic grandeur is a boon to every eye, and a mountain's tall, commanding, shoulders out the very sky. So that's the way I feel about West Virginia.
This program, Steel Drivin' Man, was produced by Jenna Allison. Thanks to recording artists John Cephas of blues duo Cephas and Wiggins and Doc Watson. Thanks also to broadcaster and ethnomusicologist Richard K. Spotswood, professor of American Studies and Anthropology Brett Williams, storyteller Ray Hicks, and professor of folklore Archie Green. And heartfelt thanks to Virginia Crockett for her poem, and to all the generous people of Talkit, West Virginia. Steel Drivin' Man was made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts.